What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, down to the wire on President Biden's legislative agenda, the House stuck without the vital spending plan in place. Budget Committee Chair Democrat John Yarmuth.
When the Biden administration released it, they didn't call it infrastructure, and they represented, I think, a visionary approach to what this country needs to make sure that a generation or two from now, we have a viable society and economy.
And ranking member Republican Jason Smith.
This $3.5 trillion spending package is nothing but a disaster. Right now, we're facing four major crises in this country. This piece of legislation only makes all of those four even worse.
And full approval for Pfizer's COVID vaccine means what exactly for employees? Workplace attorney John Ho.
In some sense, it's that simple, but in operational reality, it's a very challenging, very individualized assessment.
Those stories plus NFTs, a stone's throw from the mainstream, and we try to keep things in line.
People talking in my ear right now are saying we got to move on with this segment, so let me do that.
To offer a watch list.
It's the end of Movie Minute with Eamon.
It's Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Melissa Lee along with Joe Curran. Yep. Becky and Andrew are off today. Why are you giving us a smug look so early?
Couldn't stay away. Obviously, one day you stayed away. It's like Friday.
And I wanted to refresh to make sure I was fresh for you today.
To really bring it, which you
really
do.
Bring it.
Really bring it. Then you got to bring it for like 14 hours today. So.
Yeah, I know.
Eamon. Do you follow Eamon?
Of course I do.
Okay. So we might have time at the end, but let's get to this first. The House scrapped a plan yesterday for a vote to advance two economic proposals. The chamber is going to reconvene today as Democrats try to break a stalemate on how to proceed with President Biden's economic agenda. You know what I'm talking about, Eamon. We'll talk about this first. And then briefly.
I know where this
about,
is going, Joe.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about your movie review for a classic movie that.
Right.
And we'll try to figure out Aaron Altman. How did they do that? Did they have little tubes under his hair? And how did
You're
they
talking
make...
about the movie Broadcast News, which I watched over the weekend. And the people talking in my ear right now are saying we got to move on with this segment. So let me
All
do
right.
that.
We'll talk at the
let
end.
Let me do that.
We'll talk at the end.
Yeah, right. And we'll talk about the movie at the end. But let me get to the news first, Joe. And the news is this. No deal, no vote overnight. Here's the video of Nancy Pelosi leaving the House of Representatives. They broke up just about 12:30 last night.
Tomorrow.
Pelosi on the phone with Leader Hoyer said a few words to the reporters there who are gathered waiting for a verdict on this bipartisan infrastructure bill and where all of this is going.
Is there a date certain that you're discussing for the infrastructure?
Well, you need to amend the rule before you bring it to the floor.
Here's what we know as of right now. They did not get that deal last night. Negotiations, as I say, broke up after about 12:30 a.m. Now, there are reports of a possible deal here, which would involve a date certain for the infrastructure bill in exchange for a vote on the budget. All three bills here are tied together, the budget resolution, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and remember the John Lewis voting rights bill. The House now convenes at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Today. So here's the political dilemma that Nancy Pelosi faces, and she wasn't able to resolve last night. The moderates want to move forward with this bipartisan infrastructure deal that passed overwhelmingly in the Senate. It should pass overwhelmingly in the House as well. There should be Republican votes for that. That's $1 trillion+. Moderate Democrats want to take that deal off the table and put it in the bank right away. Some of the progressives and Nancy Pelosi say, wait a second, we've got this additional $3.5 trillion bill. We want that, and we're not going to give you the bipartisan infrastructure bill until we get that process moving on the $3.5 trillion, which they say is important for what you call sort of human capital, as well as sort of the physical infrastructure piece of all this. So that's the struggle that Pelosi has. And remember, she has a very narrow majority in the House of Representatives. She's going to need just about every single Democrat on the table to come together for this deal. But as of right now, she doesn't have nearly enough to get this thing done. And so the question is, what is Nancy Pelosi going to do? We'll know more by noon today. But this thing might not be resolved throughout the course of the day today, guys.
Well, number Amy, the moderates aren't going to, they're going to probably stick to their guns on wanting to do the other one first. But that's not even the issue. If they did vote on the $3.5 trillion, there's no way a lot of those moderate Democrats, and we've had them on the show, talked to them, they're not going for $3.5 trillion. That's not going to be a $3.5 trillion deal, if it's anything. It's going to be much, much less. And same with the Senate. That wouldn't go in the Senate. Sinema already said, Manchin has already said, and they'll both, you know, they'll both fold in, at some point with, when they get a couple of things for their individual states, probably. But it's there's just you can vote on the $3.5 trillion. You're not going to get the votes for it, even if you do vote on it before passing the infrastructure bill, which I don't think they're going to do because they want to, as you say, put it in the bank and get that done.
Yeah, look, there's an old rule in politics, Joe. When somebody offers you 80% of what you want, you take it. Come back later and argue about the 20. That would seem to apply here to the infrastructure bill. But you're right. The progressives say what they want is this $3.5 trillion, and they want to use as much leverage as they have right now to get that done. And so that's sort of where they are. But I think your analysis is spot on in the sense that everybody's looking for where they're going to fold here. Everyone's going to have to fold at some point in order to get a deal done. The question is, where do you fold and what do you get as a result of that folding? And that's the negotiation that's playing out right now. And Pelosi wasn't able to pull it together last night.
I told Josh Gottheimer yesterday, the congressman who's one of the moderate Democrats, said, will you budge?
On what? On which part of it?
Will you pass the $3.5 first so that you can get to your infrastructure bill?
No, I don't think we can do that. I mean, we've got to get infrastructure done. And listen, the next package, the reconciliation package, while you're referring to, I think in the end, we're going to have to debate that for months. It's a significant, important investment in the country. There's going to be lots of differences, but that's okay. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to debate these things. All we're saying is, like, let's get infrastructure done first. Let's make sure we pass. Let's make sure we pass that. The votes are there in the House of Representatives. I know we can get that done, and then we'll move on. And you know, and frankly, I'm very optimistic we can get there.
You know, he's saying there's got to be a complete repeal of SALT and all these things that aren't going to happen. Nancy Pelosi is straight face saying I'm never going to do it, and we know none of them are going to stick to their guns when it's all said and done. So people around the country that watch this stuff, they're like, I'm tired of watching. I'm tired of watching people say things that they don't mean. And it's all negotiations.
Well, they mean them in the sense that they're staking out a position,
made,
right?
But it's sausage
it's
being made. But sausage being made is disgusting. And this is even worse.
fair enough. I like your analysis, Joe.
What can you say to that? You can tell me how they got that sweat coming. And you know what? The producer told me that he
was
not
amazed
tell
by
you.
It.
He did not tell you to move on. You're a producer.
I made that
dream.
Up. That was a bit
you
of.
Moved on, you moved on yourself because you're the producer and you
that
said
was a bit
I
of,
gotta get.
That was a bit of news acting. That was a bit of news acting. Later, I'm going to tear up for you.
You say it.
Look,
I
will say this
there.
About broadcast news. It is an iconic movie in our industry. I'd never seen it. Everyone has always said, you got to see it. So I finally watched it over the weekend. I didn't know it was a rom-com, though. I thought it was going to be like the serious drama. I didn't realize it was a love triangle, basically. And I thought the two men that the Jane character had to choose from, the two men, Aaron and Tom, were both total bums. And I'm glad she didn't pick either one of them.
Spoiler alert. Knowing you as you do, and I like Tom. I like Tom. He wasn't the brightest guy, but I like the way he moved through things without any conscience whatsoever. And you remember at the end when he did get the tear, he goes, look, I teared up anyway when I didn't have the other camera. So calling it up was like, oh my God, these journalists are always so high minded. You know what's my favorite
fake
thing?
Fake news acting, though, right?
My favorite thing, Jack. As Bill, whatever his name is, Jack was the main anchor.
Jack Nicholson comes in and plays
the
Walter Cronkite figure.
Which everyone wanted, and they were having massive layoffs, and they said, he goes, it's just horrible. It's just
great
horrible.
Line.
And go, well, we could cut a couple of million off your salary, and we wouldn't have to have those layoffs, Bill. And he looked at the
guy. And Nicholson doesn't even say anything to that.
No, he just looked at the guy, and the guy running the place goes, bad joke. Bad joke. I swear I didn't mean that. Really good. Anyway.
Who's running these networks, Joe? Is it the talent or is it the suits, man?
Rachel did pretty well. No, it's the suits. It's the suits. It's the suits.
These people are geniuses. They're geniuses with wisdom that you can't even imagine.
Oh, now we are going to move on. Oh, that did it. Okay. Thank you.
Let's go. Move it on.
I told him, you should check out The Godfather. You finally saw broadcasting. This is a movie about the mafia, and I think you'd really like it. Check it out.
Okay,
guy named Marlon
thanks.
Brando.
I don't
know if you're familiar with him. Jimmy Kahn.
I'm going to look into that. I actually read the book. The book is great.
You can rent it.
All right.
G2 is not bad either. At 8 a.m.
That's the end of Movie Minute with Eamon.
It is.
It's like a whole other show. It's like a spinoff, a Squawk spinoff. It's like Joni Lovechachi is the Happy Days.
Chachi's still around.
This will be almost as good as that.
Almost
as good.
Almost as good as Hello, Larry. Hello, Larry.
All right, we're moving on.
NFT market alive and well. A clip art of a rock, just sold for about 400 Ether, or about $1.3 million. That happened late yesterday. Ether Rock is a brand of crypto collectible that's been around since 2017, making it one of the oldest NFTs around. There's just 100 of them, only 100 of them. And according to the Ether Rock website, these virtual rocks serve no purpose beyond being able to be bought and sold. But they do give you a strong sense of pride in being an owner of one of only 100 rocks in the game. Ether rocks have been selling for higher and higher prices in recent days. 2 days ago, the cheapest was $305,000. 2 weeks ago, it was $97,000. And over the weekend, a crypto entrepreneur, Justin Sun, tweeted that he just spent $500,000 on a rock. Hey, that's a nice one, though. I mean, the other ones, I'm not so sure. But
he got a good one.
He got a really, really good one. I know a joke about that I couldn't tell on the air. If his name sounds familiar, you might recognize him as the tech entrepreneur who runs BitTorrent and who founded the cryptocurrency platform Tron. In 2019, he paid $4.5 million at auction for a dinner with Warren Buffett. That's the guy we're talking about. They dined in February of 2020 and reportedly discussed the value of cryptocurrency. But from what I can tell, he was unable to convert Warren Buffett. And I'm certain that he was unable to convert Charlie Munger, who calls it like dog crap or something. Rat poison.
Along the lines. Yeah. But I heard a really great argument for NFTs because you were reading that very skeptically. And so
that's because of the rocks.
Oh, but a cyberpunk is okay.
I want
of an NFT.
No, I've said what I would pay for. There's a picture of the big O, Oscar Robertson, where he's about 8 feet off the ground. His legs are completely like this, and he's getting a rebound. And if I was the one who owned that, being from Cincinnati, I would pay a lot for that. But I don't know about some of the other ones.
The argument that I heard yesterday that was very compelling to me was that, like so many things in life, you buy things for a sense of community. Like the label you wear on your shirt or the kind of car you drive, a piece of art that you hang on your wall. It's entree into a sort of community of like-minded individuals. And NFTs do that. So it's not necessarily the long-term, not the value of that rock in 20 years, but it's what it gets you right now in terms of who else believes in this future.
Vaynerchuk makes, when Gary comes on, he makes a good case for it. And is a baseball card collecting dust up in an attic when you rather have the only one digitally? I can understand how that would work. And art, we've seen some art. I saw an art of an unmade, it was over in England, and it was an unmade bed with a cigarette put out in an ashtray. It was just sitting there, and that was someone's eye. So it's in the eye of the beholder.
Let's go.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, a standstill on the Hill. Republican Congressman Jason Smith on the delayed vote on Biden's economic agenda.
They don't have the votes. The reason why they don't have the votes is because those moderate members have been back home in their congressional district, and they're hearing from their constituents that this is the wrong plan at the wrong time for all the wrong reasons.
but the sticking points shouldn't be sticking points, at least not yet, says Democrat John Yarmuth.
Whether it ends up being $3.5 trillion or not is certainly debatable at this point, but that'll be worked out over the coming months.
Soft infrastructure or spiritual infrastructure, right after this.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade Inc. is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Stand by, Joe, in 3, 2.
This is Squawk Pod.
One is mic, cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan along with Melissa Lee. Andrew and Becky are off today. You have to expect that kind of thing. It's August. It's the 24th, I think, isn't it? I don't know if it's dog days. Are dog days of August, do they help the dogs of the Dow? Do you know? Or is it that's not related?
To do with.
And you know, National Dog Day is coming up on Thursday.
Oh, it's Thursday.
We're preparing some
treats.
Some treats. I mean, Cuomo's done a lot of things, but abandoning it, that's the cover of the Post that he left this dog, Captain. Did you see that at the governor's mansion, Melissa? He left his dog at the governor and said someone else take care of him.
Why would he do that?
Because he was going on vacation. So you know what?
Oh, so he's going to pick it up later?
I had three people at my house say, we'll take that dog. And it's like, no, we will not take that. You know, they're ready to, well, that'd be four dogs that we would have. So no, we're not taking, but he is cute. Did you see him? I mean, you gotta bring him with you.
Wait, but he's not leaving him.
Actually, he got mad and said the coverage was not fair because he just wanted someone to watch the dog while he goes on vacation.
Right, and then he's going to get the dog back.
Well, we'll see. Okay. We shall see.
All right.
We're watching.
I'm sure.
Now to the Washington News. The House scrapping a plan yesterday for a vote to advance two economic proposals. The chamber will reconvene today as Democrats try to break a stalemate on how to proceed with President Biden's economic agenda. For more on what investors should expect, let's welcome Congressman John Yarmuth of Kentucky, Budget Committee Chairman, and Congressman Jason Smith of Missouri, the committee's ranking member. Congressman Yarmuth, a point we made earlier was that even if the Speaker Pelosi and the left did get its way and get a vote on the reconciliation before you did the overall infrastructure that's already been arrived at, there's a lot of moderate Democrats that you don't have on board for $3.5 trillion, aren't there?
There are a few. There's no question about it, Joe. And that's the political reality we face. We have a very diverse caucus. We have very liberal members and some more moderate members. And the important thing to remember, though, is that the content of the $3.5 trillion plan, which is basically what we call soft infrastructure, these are support for American families and education and so forth, and climate change policy. These are enormously popular, not just with our caucus overall, but with the American people. So while we may have a slight difference on how much we should spend on which type of initiative, overall, we have almost unanimous support in the caucus for that. But we do have enough people who want to hold hold us hostage to get what
but
they want.
But you got the other ones done. You know, and you've got some Republicans that a lot of Republicans are mad at the Republicans that signed on to the bipartisan deal. And you've got that done. Why don't you get while the getting's good? And then you're not going to get $3.5 trillion. So get while the getting's good on the 1.2. And then start bargaining for what you are able to get moderate Democrats on. And I don't, what do you call it, a soft infrastructure? I came up with a better term. What about metaphysical? Okay. Instead of physical infrastructure, metaphysical infrastructure.
I think things like child care and early childhood education and community college and other things like that
It's not infrastructure. It's a Democratic wish list for what you've wanted for the last 50 years. It's not infrastructure.
Well, it happens to be that as well, but that's all right. You know, the plan, Joe, when the Biden administration released it, they didn't call it infrastructure. There was the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan, and they represented I think, a visionary approach to what this country needs to make sure that a generation or two from now, we have a viable society and economy.
Congressman Smith, is that how you view it? You might have a different viewpoint.
Yeah, I definitely have a different viewpoint. This $3.5 trillion spending package is nothing but a disaster. It's a job that rewards political friends, allies, and donors. It puts tax increases on all working class families. It increases taxes on job creators to such a degree that it would make our tax rates higher than that of communist China. Right now, we're facing four major crises in this country: an inflation crisis, a border crisis, an energy crisis, and an Afghanistan crisis. This piece of legislation only makes all of those four even worse.
What do you think is going to happen, Jason, in terms of how does this move forward or does it not move forward? There are certain things you're not going to be able to stop, as I'm talking about the Republicans.
Joe, they simply don't have the votes. That's why we're at a standstill right now. The week of July 12th, we were supposed to have a markup in the budget committee on this budget resolution. They had to cancel because they didn't have the votes. Before the August recess, we were going to pass the House budget off of the House floor. They didn't have the votes. Last night, we were going to pass the budget resolution through a deeming rule through the United States House of Representatives. They did not have the votes. At the current moment, they don't have the votes. The reason why they don't have the votes is because those moderate members have been back home in their congressional district, and they're hearing from their constituents that this is the wrong plan at the wrong time for all the wrong reasons.
John, if you had to really give me an answer with no negotiations or spin or anything else, what do you think the final reconciliation bill actually looks like, and does it come after the infrastructure bill is already voted on, or do you think that Speaker Pelosi sticks to her guns on when it's voted for?
I think what's going to happen is that there will be a guarantee to the moderates that there will be a date certain to vote on the bipartisan infrastructure legislation. And then that's in exchange for voting to take what is a first step in the reconciliation process. This bill that we'll be voting on, the budget resolution, doesn't spend a penny. It just starts in motion the process where 13 committees in the House and just about the same number in the Senate will be drafting the legislation that will actually implement child care and climate policy and those things that are contained in the package. You know, whether it ends up being $3.5 trillion or not is certainly debatable at this point. I know there are a lot of members, including those moderates, who would like to spend a little bit less and raise a little bit less in offsets. But that'll be worked out over the coming months. Right now, we need to get the process started. That's what the Senate did when they passed this budget resolution. And again, what we're trying to do is to institute policies and programs that the vast majority of the American people think are crucial to their life, and child care being one, early childhood education being one of the most important things I think we can do as a country. Almost every advanced nation does that, and we don't. We need to do that. We need to do some incentives for changing climate policy. We need to provide for infrastructure for our seniors so that they all have retirement with dignity. And that's a real problem right now, and that's why the Biden administration committed so many resources, or proposing to commit so much resources to that. So, again, we're very confident that the American people support what we're doing, but we've got a few people who took the position that you essentially did, that at least was implied by your question, and that is, why don't you take the bird in the hand? But we understand that there are many people in our caucus, far more than the 9 or 10 who are taking this position right now. There are far more who say, we're not going to give up the chance to pass the your word metaphysical package.
Yeah, spiritual just, infrastructure.
Yeah,
thank you.
Spiritual infrastructure. Thank you. I kind of like that. But they're not going to give up any. They want to avoid the risk of those moderates bailing on the spiritual infrastructure package.
Hey, so Jason, in your view, or do Republicans think that an overwhelming majority of the country is behind that $3.5 trillion? Is that the polling that you've seen? Do you just concede to Congressman Yarmouth, Congressman Smith, that's just a factual a point that the vast majority of Americans are ready to spend $3.5 trillion on a Democratic wish list?
They absolutely aren't. And this budget resolution spends $68 trillion over the next 10 years. That's within the budget resolution. That is the highest spending in the history of the United States. If you count the spending that the Democrats started since they took over Congress in 2019, combined with Bernie's budget proposal here, that is more spending than all of taxes that have ever been collected in the history of the United States. When we are already facing inflation at the worst time, in my colleague's home state of Tennessee, in Louisville, gas prices are up 74% this year alone. The American people, they are not happy with the rising cost of inflation. That means they have a higher cost to put food on their table, gas in their cars, and clothes on their backs. They're not having it. They're not for it. And that is why they can't get the votes right now.
You want a last word, Congressman? I was going to ask you about, Kentucky today. I'm worried about COVID. And I'm from Cincinnati. Things are...
It's a shame.
Go ahead, John.
We have a great governor who's doing his best, but unfortunately we have a Republican-dominated state. We now have all 120 counties in our state are in the red zone. This is the constant vaccination misinformation and fear stoking that we've seen. But let me go back to one thing. One of the things that we haven't mentioned about this plan is it would extend vision, hearing, and dental benefits to people on Medicare. That polls at close to 90% support with seniors over 65. That's expected, but that's just an example about the broad public support for what we're trying to do.
Okay. So that would be the last word. Thank you, Congressman Yarmuth and Congressman Smith. We appreciate it, and we'll all be watching today.
Thanks, Joe.
I think it's going to things are going to be in earnest again. We'll see which way it goes. Thanks.
Next on Squawk Pod, full FDA approval for Pfizer's COVID shot, which could mean full vaccine mandates for employees. Workplace safety lawyer John Ho answers all of our questions.
Employers have been going through these challenges and these evolutions with COVID since the start. So this is just, another one step in that process.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Melissa Lee. Becky and Andrew are off today, and no, this is not our last hour together. I figure there are another 10 hours that we have together this week. Okay, that was fast. Yesterday's full FDA approval of the Pfizer jab, COVID vaccine, sparking a flurry of vaccine mandates in the public and private sector. Join us now on what employers can and can't mandate. John Ho, co-chair of the OSHA, O-S-H-A, Workplace Safety Practice at Cozen O'Connor. Wow, John, this is a quagmire wrapped in a riddle, surrounded by a real quandary. Just looking at all the legal ramifications, you're going to be in demand. I'd raise prices, I think. So let's just start with some possible exemptions. I mean, people with MS, people with religious. I mean, I can think of 20 different reasons why someone would say I am precluded from getting this. How do they approach their employer? What would they say?
Right. Well, exactly. To your point. First, thank you both for having me on. But yes, employers have been going through these challenges and these evolutions with COVID since the start. So this is just another one step in that process. But to your point, Joe. If an employer does implement a mandatory vaccine policy, it's certainly going to be subject to accommodation issues. And you point out disability issues and also sincerely held religious beliefs. So it really is going to depend on the employer's policy. And really, there needs to be an interactive process. The employee needs to let the employer know, here's why I cannot get the vaccine. Then the employer has to discuss it and, you know, essentially provide a reasonable accommodation if it can. And if it cannot, if that accommodation is going to pose an undue hardship, then they don't have to provide it. I mean, in some sense, it's that simple. But in operational reality, it's a very challenging, very individualized assessment.
So what if they don't provide the accommodation and the employee stays where he or she is and says, I'm not doing it? Then can they fire those people or tell them to stay home? Or what would they do?
Right. Well, and that's the question, right? If staying home is the answer, and that's a reasonable accommodation, and certainly that the employee might argue that particularly if they've been working from home for a while, says, well, why can't you provide accommodation? For the last year and a half, I've been working at home. Why can't I continue this? That is going to be the analysis that the employer needs to conduct. But if it determines for business reasons that it really needs its workforce, you know, back in the office, for different reasons, it's going to have to overcome that, you know, suggestion that the work cannot continue to be done at home. But if it ultimately concludes that it is an undue hardship and that there's really no substitute, that the employee really needs to get the vaccine to perform his or her job, then yes, termination certainly is an option for the employer. Now, that could, of course, lead to litigation.
What if someone is just adamant and says, I'm 25 years old, I never get sick. I've great health in my view. And they say, I'm worried about heart inflammation, blood clots. What are the other things that I've seen? Fertility issues. I've seen, some of the very rare cases of some weird autoimmune. What if they say, this is my body and I am worried about these things? You may tell me I'm wrong, but everybody's got an opinion. I'm worried about that and I don't want to do it.
Right. Look, if it's just a straightforward, I don't want to do it sort of period, whether they make some, you know, medical excuse or they, even if it's a political issue, I mean, that certainly is not going to be, you know, really a disability.
So
you
get fired.
Right. I mean, if they have doctor support for that, then, you know, maybe we're in that area. Now we've got to take that as a disability accommodation. But they have no support and they just say, I'm 25, I'm healthy. I think my own body is a stronger immune system than the vaccine. Then, you know, very likely that is not going to be an issue where an accommodation has to be provided.
John, is there precedent for private employers to mandate something in the public health realm? And do you think that there could be constitutional challenges to mandates?
Well, I mean, first of all, of course, the Constitution is really going to apply in the public sector, but it's not. We know that in the healthcare industry, in particular, flu mandates have been around for a while, right? Particularly with schools. So the issue of, you know, actually mandating vaccines is nothing new, and vaccine hesitancy is nothing new. Obviously, COVID's brought that to a, you know, significantly heightened issue, both and made it political. I don't think the flu vaccine really was ever, you know, a political issue. So, you know, employers, certainly in particular industries, like I mentioned, healthcare and education, have been dealing with these issues already. I think it's, you know, the general industry, retail and hospitality, this is much more of a new event.
Right. The public facing sort of industries. What rights do employees have, if they have any, in this circumstance, if they are, you know, under the assumption that there's a mandate now and all my coworkers are mandated and you learn that the person next to you is unvaccinated? What right do you have to say, I don't feel comfortable where I'm located or how I'm assigned?
Right. Look, it's, again, because there's no law out there that says you have to put in a mandatory, vaccine policy. I mean, the safety issue is really a totality of the circumstances, right? Under OSHA's general duty clause, every employer has to provide a workplace free from recognized hazards that are likely to cause death and serious bodily harm. And certainly COVID is one of those. So I don't think it's enough for the employee just to say, look, you know, I need to know that all of my other employees are vaccinated. But certainly if you if you take that fact and also say, look, my employer is also making me work close with people. My employer is not providing sufficient PPE. They're not providing me a mask. I have a lot of interaction with the public and there's no plastic barriers between myself and, you know, a customer when I'm you know, cashing them out of the register. Then I think those concerns become legitimate and they've got the right to complain to OSHA, which is the agency responsible for investigating those workplace safety issues. But I think the lack of a vaccine itself is probably not going to get them there. It's going to be a lot of the other stuff as well.
We've been expecting full FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine for a while and also expecting full approval for the other ones as well, John. And I'm wondering how many inbound calls you're getting from employers inquiring about what they can do and what they can mandate.
Well, yeah, right. And then, of course, you know, that approval just came down yesterday. So I think it's a little early. We certainly do expect that, you know, the full approval is going to lead to more employers reconsidering whether they want to implement a, you know, a mandatory vaccine policy. I think right now, I think most employers obviously still haven't. We think, I don't necessarily think this is going to open a floodgate of employers wanting to do it. I mean, their Justice Department had said a few weeks ago, even in a temporary emergency status, there's something under federal law that prohibits an employer from mandating it. So from a legal perspective, the legality was probably the same as it was 2 days ago than it was yesterday. I think the optics become much better. I think everyone's hoping that with more public confidence now that it's a full approval, the inoculation rates are going to be driven up by that. But you see every week, I think more and more employers are requiring some kind of mandatory policy or soft mandatory, which is, of course, what President Biden did with his federal workers not so long ago, saying, look, either you get the test or you've got to undergo regular testing, right? Essentially making it a real big inconvenience if they want to continue with the vaccine.
What if an employer said, OK, if you don't get the vaccine, you got to get testing every week and you got to wear, you know, a double mask or something like that? Because this is what you're going to hear. Even if you are vaccinated, you can still spread it. And you can still give it to someone. So the next thing you're going to have to be, then an employer could say, you need to be double vaxxed, you need to test every week, and you need to wear a mask the entire time you're there. Why not say that if you're contagious when you've already been vaccinated? Why isn't that the next step? And then when does it end?
Right. Well, to your point, that's the president's, you know, policy with federal workers is taking that approach, what we call a soft mandatory approach, right? If you don't get vaccinated, okay. You know, we're not going to force you, but here's what's going to happen. You know, submit to regular testing and wear the double mask.
It may happen even if you are vaccinated, since people that are vaccinated can still spread the disease and still have breakthrough infection. So why not? Then they should be tested and wear a mask, too.
Yeah, look, I mean, again, as you started, our discussion, I mean, this is a challenging
situation. Yeah, this is a quandary.
I had one matching answer for you.
You're not getting enough calls yet. Did you hear that? It's only been a day. And he's saying, no, my phone has not been ringing. Do you want to put up your phone number or something? Or do you have any business cards around? We're doing all we can for you.
I appreciate that.
You're going to get some. I don't see how you don't get called. And these are all. You know, these are things that I read on social media. It's really crazy. But, John, thank you. We appreciate it. And, you got a lot to think about. So I want you to go somewhere and just sit down and think again, because none of us know what the answers are going to be. It's very difficult. Quandary wrapped in an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
Yeah, exactly. Great way to phrase it.
Yeah, thanks. See you later,
okay.
John.
Thank you.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Listen and follow Squawk Pod where podcasts are available. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please rate Squawk Pod or write a review to let us know what you think. Have a great day. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.